Hello and welcome to the Film Rescue Show, where we give Hollywood a helping hand by fixing their faux pas with the superpower of hindsight. I am this week's host, Jesse Ferguson, and our guest today is Alexa Vargas, and she is going to pitch us a fix for Malignant, the 2021 very strange horror movie directed by James Wan. Hello, Alexa. How are you today?
Hi. Really cool to be here, especially, like, you know, for this, like, new age of film rescue, as it were.
Yeah. I don't know when this is going to air, but I believe this is the first recorded episode of the new season in the new format. So thank you for helping us break this in and kick the tires, as it were.
Well, I'm also really ready to talk about this. I'll hawk my YouTube show later. But
absolutely,
I was not excited at the prospect of making like a scripted video on Malignant, but I also just had many, many, many thoughts.
Perfect. That is what we are here for. All right. So let's start, as we do, with the things that we liked about this movie. Do you want to go first?
Yeah.
Because I have some.
Yeah.
I had never seen this until you pitched it. So I watched it for this recording, and I rather enjoyed it, but let's hear you go first.
Okay, yeah, so I don't like this movie, but I do recognize why people like it. It is a James Wan film, which, if you're on his vibe, this is definitely his vibe. and it's got a really, like, interesting monster, which is something like that's really tricky to do nowadays. Like, it feels like all the good slashers were in the 80s, and we've just been kind of ripping them off.
Mm-hmm.
This does feel new and unique, and without, you know, spoiling too much right now, the sort of movement of the monster is really good. And also, weird thing to say, the action scenes are really good. This is a horror movie with, like, John Woo gunfight ballet.
Yeah, especially at the end, like, after the reveal, and when we the audience know what's going on, and they can really just go full bore and show the monster. They really have a good time with it.
Yeah, so those are the things I recognize as most good about it. I kind of want to tear it down at the foundations otherwise and sort of start over. You go ahead and say more of what you liked.
Sure. So for starters, I am not generally on James Wan's wavelength. I did not enjoy any of the Saw movies. In fact, I only watched one or two of them. And then just was like, yep, this is clearly not for me. That's cool. I'm glad that people enjoy it. And,
I tried to
go have fun.
I tried to watch them all when they were about to get removed from Netflix like 2 years back. And I got halfway through two and I'm like, I'm bored. Which is a weird thing to say about a torture movie, I gotta say.
Yeah. I did enjoy Aquaman, but that's a whole other thing. Wait, hold on.
Yeah, that was James Wan, and he's also done some of the later Fast and Furious movies, but I haven't seen those either.
That was Justin Lin.
Oh, god damn it, I apologize.
That's okay. we can cut that out. That's
I could have sworn that was him. Like, okay, but he does do all those Conjuring movies, which I like the first Conjuring movie. It's kind of just like a good haunted house movie, but it kind of came out in a period where good haunted house movies were hard to come by because we were still in the Paranormal Activity era when the first Conjuring dropped. Now we're in the Conjuring era and I'm tired of it, but
that is totally fair. I haven't seen any of those. I honestly typically don't go too far in for horror. Like, horror isn't generally my thing, especially the, like, visceral, gory body horror, which is rather ironic since Seth and I just wrote a visceral, gory horror screenplay and we're shooting it in June. But be that as it may, I think that the Like, I didn't see the twist coming. I feel like I should have, which we'll get into a little bit later when we start talking spoilers. But I didn't see the twist coming. I agree. The action is really cool. The monster is it's a really novel twist on a pretty common monster, mm-hmm. which, again, we'll get into a little bit later. I thought the visual effects were pretty good. I thought the performances in general were pretty good.
Really?
I wasn't disappointed by them.
I was not impressed by sadly the lead, Madison, I thought was really stiff sometimes. But you know, that's some fair. Of the characters do seem to know what movie they're in. The two cops are very aware of what movie they're in. Madison's sister, Sydney, was good.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. I could have just been partial because I missed her from, you know, haven't seen her since the 4400, but I really enjoyed Dr. Weaver, Jacqueline McKenzie. I thought she did a great job.
Mm-hmm. She definitely brought the sort of scientific gravitas the role called for. She's not in much of the movie, though.
No, but she's good where she is. And like you said, she knows exactly what movie she's in, which is really important.
And, you know, another thing that has been said about the movie, now this is something I actually don't agree with, but the movie does play around with lighting in certain scenes. Okay. There's like a whole like bedroom scene that's just like bathed in red light. Which people have compared to Italian giallo films. Think, what's that one? They made a Suspiria.
Not my forte.
Suspiria.
Okay.
Suspiria is compared to. I don't think it actually works as a giallo film, but I do get why people would latch on to that sort of like, hey, sometimes this movie uses color differently.
And it could be that that's what James was going for, and he did just maybe fell a little short of the mark in your opinion.
Yeah, that's my opinion. It's something I can see that people would like. You know, after you come away from stuff that made by Guillermo del Toro, you're a little spoiled when it comes to...
It's real hard to compare, like, when you're looking at literally anything from del Toro's repertoire to something like this, it's not going to... It's never going to hold up.
So I think we kind of have to spoil it at this point to
talk
about
fine.
It.
That's totally fine. We can do that.
Okay, so I was unfortunately, for my viewing experience, I was spoiled on the movie. And I was also... Okay, so I caught a review from Scaredy Cats. It's a YouTube channel. You might have heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they did not like the movie. And they gave a pretty cogent reason why, and that kind of biased me against the movie, but I also, when I sat down to watch it a couple months ago, I absolutely agreed with them. I saw exactly where they were coming from. The movie is just kind of mean.
That is true. I will give you that, yeah. And before we go into specifics, we should go ahead and say, listener, if you have not seen this yet and are worried about spoilers, pause the podcast and go check it out. I do think even if you don't enjoy it, I do think it's worth watching
this is definitely
the novelty.
Yeah, this is definitely a movie worth seeing without being spoiled by. And it's surprisingly easy to do. Like, I don't think most review media gave it away.
Yeah, and most everybody that I have talked to in either, you know, whether it's been from reading reviews or just talking to folks about it, before I had seen it, was very much a, like, they were very conscious not to spoil things. And it was very much a, like, no, just go see it. Go see it as blind as possible. You know, don't let me spoil anything. I don't want to talk to you about it until we have spoiled it or until you have seen it. But know that it is wild. And I will concur. It is wild.
It is a trip. Okay.
Okay, so full spoiler time.
Full spoilers. Okay, so... There is a woman in this movie called Madeline, and she is having visions of a psycho killer killing people. And that's how the movie is advertised. That's how the movie's narrative progresses. What it turns out in the end is that the killer is actually...
Hold on. Yes? Hold on. Let's actually, like, do the progression. So first it's just she's having weird visions of this killer.
Yeah.
Eventually
who
we learn...
Who broke into her house and killed her husband.
Right. Broke into her house, killed her husband, put her into a, like, you know, unconscious. She woke up in the hospital with, you know, some trauma. Eventually we find out that the killer is someone that... she knew from childhood, possibly a supernatural person that she knew from her childhood, which she has no memory of her childhood before she was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
But this killer is someone that is coming back and targeting people around her that have some relation to her, even if it's a relation that she is currently unaware of because of the aforementioned amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step is that we find out that not only is this a supernatural being, or not necessarily a supernatural being, but this is a, how would you describe this? A conjoined twin?
Yes, it is a conjoined twin where her brother was not a functioning, like, removable body. He was basically some arms that came out of her back. And a misshapen face on the back of her head.
Right. And so much so that, like, their brains were, like, their brains are attached.
Yeah.
And to the point that you could not separate them surgically without probably most likely killing both twins.
Which was not the plan. Like, and they were in a facility that was studying them because it is a very extreme case of a known medical mm-hmm. phenomenon. And right. The doctors tried to, I you know what, I don't want to super go into what the doctors tried to do, but eventually they're just like, Gabriel is just kind of a really mean piece of shit who sometimes takes control of Madeline's body,
mm-hmm.
and or Madison's body, and they have Madison's to body. They have to remove him, but they can't. So what they opt to do is they cut off all of his, like, body parts that are, like, growing out of her back, and... Mm-hmm. remove as much of his face as they could, push his brain deeper into her skull, and then, like, staple the back of her head shut.
Right, like, they close her brain, they close
her head,
her skull in around this, you know, this second brain and, you know, tiny piece of skull.
Yeah.
And the inciting incident of the film is that her husband, like, she grows up. This all happens when she's a child. In the process, she loses, like, her memory is removed, or she, I don't know if it's just traumatic. She has amnesia because of this, or if it's something that the doctors did specifically on purpose, but either way, she loses her memory. She gets adopted.
And it should not be forgotten that for a little bit during her adoption phase, Gabriel would speak to her as sort of like, everyone thought was her imaginary friend.
Right.
And Gabriel was trying to get her to do evil things, like
mm-hmm.
kill her unborn sister.
Yeah. Yep.
Eventually, the sister was born, and Madison had, like, someone to talk to and focus on, and Gabriel just kind of faded away.
Right, just sort of receded into her subconscious.
But then he came back, and he literally, like, pushes his way out of the back of her skull, forces her arms to work backwards and her legs to work backwards, and runs around like a wild man killing people.
Basically taking revenge for everything that happened to him.
Yes.
So he starts killing all of the doctors that were in the facility, and then goes after their birth mother, kidnaps and tortures their birth mother for putting them up for basically for giving them to this hospital, and then targets the sister, the younger sister.
Yes.
So eventually it's revealed that the, like, because Madeline or Madison, you got me doing it now.
Sorry.
That's okay. Madison has had, like, three miscarriages, and her husband is kind of abusive, and the inciting incident is, in fact, that they are arguing about like the
take
the,
care of the baby. Don't go to work.
Right. She's currently pregnant. She's comes home from work exhausted and tired, and her husband is like, don't, you know, you shouldn't go to work. And then, you know, he is a complete and utter shit heel. She shoves him, he shoves her back, and she cracks her head again. Or no, he doesn't shove her. He like actually pushes his head, her head against the wall. Which is very traumatic and mean, like you said, really mean.
Yeah.
And in the process, like the opening in the back of her skull kind of opens up, like cracks open and releases Gabriel.
Yeah.
And that's, and how, he, the, like, that's how the movie starts.
And you do get to see the full transformation sequence very late in the film. It's like mm-hmm. really well timed in terms of pacing there. Because you've already right. seen Gabriel kind of like do his thing. And he's not super strong. He's kind of more like peak human because he can. They don't explain how Gabriel does anything he does, but he's like pushing her body to the limit. And he also has lightning powers because he was electroshock therapy.
Right.
Sure. James Wan likes blinky lights. That's one thing I've definitely understood about the man.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We gotta give him that.
He likes blinky lights. I think in one of the Insidious movies, they have like this piece of ghost catching tech that is literally just blinking lights. Like it does nothing else. It just blinks.
Nice. That's perfect. By the end of the movie, she gets arrested for all of these murders because she's the prime suspect because, surprise, she's the murderer.
Yeah, her body did the murders.
Her body did all the murders.
And one of the cops raises the very real concern. It's like, you're saying your imaginary friend was the murderer.
Yeah.
Good so line. She gets... Good line, well delivered.
Yep. Yeah, that is another good thing. Like, that second cop, what was her name?
Regina
Moss, yeah, played by McCole, Breonna White.
I don't recognize Michelle, her.
I don't know how you pronounce that.
I don't recognize her. She's been in stuff, but she's not a she's not a big name.
Yeah, but she was very good as the like deadpan sort of Han Solo. Are you shitting me with this premise character? We're past the, I'm assuming we've been talking for at least 10 minutes. So let's say that we're past the swear threshold.
Okay.
But yeah, they end up with, she's in jail. Her mother is in the hospital, after she crashed through Madison's attic because that's where Gabriel had kidnapped and stashed her. And, she breaks out, like, she basically, Gabriel goes out, or like, this is the part that you were talking about, the big reveal where we see him like poke his face out of the back of her head and goes on a rampage and just murders everyone in this jail cell.
And then a bunch of cops.
Yep. And then goes on kind of a rampage through the police precinct. Eventually ended up in the hospital where his mother is, where their mother is at, along with
Sydney. And he tries to kill Sydney because he's jealous of Madison having someone else to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And Madison then, and there is sort of a progression of Madison's like breaking out of his mental control across the movie. So by the end, she sort of locks him in jail inside her head.
Yep.
It's all visual metaphor, and that's fine. It works fine.
It works.
And then she saves her sister, and Gabriel is locked away forever because he's a bad person who deserves to be locked away.
Yes, and then presumably she still goes to jail for
murdering, you know, so many cops.
For the rest of her life, or if not, receive the death penalty for all the murders. Regardless of if she was in control of her body at the time. Either that or she spends the rest of her life in a mental institution.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and then that is the movie.
Yeah.
And you're right. It is mean. The whole movie is very mean.
So I watched another movie that this was compared to, Basket Case. You may have heard of it.
Mm-hmm. I have heard of it.
Very similar in terms of presentation. It even has a bit where the not deformed brother has visions of the deformed brother going on a killing spree. So, I mean, it's not exactly the same movie, and Malignant obviously has way more budget. The basket case monster sometimes goes into stop motion, and it looks rough.
Yeah.
But Basket Case works from the central conceit that the brothers were conjoined, and then they were forcibly separated from each other when they were, like, 12, and the deformed brother was thrown in a bag of trash and thrown out. And his other brother saved him. And they were raised by their kind, caring aunt. And, you know, once they hit adulthood and the aunt died, they decided to kill the people who forcibly separated them.
Sure, yeah. So, as you do.
Yeah, as you do. Go on a killing spree in, like, the really seedy Times Square. Like, this is, like, pre-Giuliani cleaned everything up Times Square.
Okay.
It's that kind of movie. Very early 80s. Buy some drugs from me, your friendly drug dealer on the side of the road. So, Basket Case makes the point that Belial, the deformed brother, is not inherently a bad person. Him being forcibly separated from his brother and literally thrown in the trash by their father just drove him mad. It was very bad for his self-identity.
Yeah.
Now, and Belial does things over the course of the movie that are unacceptable. I don't like the character, especially the parts where he starts, you know, sexually assaulting women. But the movie is firmly on their side as this is a tragedy. These boys were messed up by adults who did not care for them.
Okay.
Malignant does the exact opposite of that. So we open on the big, scary, I swear it takes place in Gotham research institution.
Mm-hmm.
And our Dr. Florence Weaver is, like, you know, talking about this unique case they have. But then suddenly Gabriel breaks out and is killing people. So they have to shoot him with, like, an elephant trank gun.
Right.
And then, like, they tie him down to a chair and, like, you've been a very bad boy. It's time to cut out the cancer. And then they, you know, do the operation thing. So there's no kindness there. And that's not inherently a problem. It's not necessarily a problem that the doctors who Gabriel is going to kill are bad people. The problem comes when way, way at the end of the movie, when Madison is talking to Gabriel, she explicitly tells him, no, you weren't made bad. You were born bad. You were born evil, my, you know, twin brother. You were born evil. And the movie backs that up because not only does he, like, kill people when he's a small child, he also has a real thing about killing and devouring fetuses to grow his strength.
Mm-hmm.
That's dark. And also, I'm forgetting it. I forgot it. Brain, come on.
I mean, he does go after the sister for no crime other than
I remembered. Okay. There's an interview with their mother where it's revealed that, super huge trigger warning here, she was a 14-year-old rape survivor, which is why Gabriel is deformed, because he was literally born of an evil act.
Hmm.
So that is the...
I missed that part.
That's
trash.
That's very trash. That's super unpleasant. And then there's just other little stuff, like the fact that Madison has lost a lot of babies is just... I'm sorry, I think miscarriage is a little heavy for this dumbass action film.
Fair. All right.
It's going to be a little trashy. Like, when her husband beats her up and then he gets killed. That's a classic mm-hmm. horror movie setup and payoff. You establish this person as kind of a shitheel so the audience doesn't feel too bad about them getting offed. Like, that's sure. just standard horror movie logic. But then, like, when Madison wakes up from Gabriel saving her from her abusive husband, oh, Gabriel also absorbed her latest fetus. Okay, so Gabriel's just awful. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the point of this movie. Gabriel sucks. He is a bad person because he was born bad.
Yep.
And there's also, this one's more minor, but when she is locked in jail, the jail cell is just kind of like this weird alt prison universe where, like, there's all these clearly criminal women who are just, like, offended that they put a non-criminal in with the obvious criminals.
Yeah.
They're like, how dare you, a good person, be in here with us? You're breaking the natural order.
What are you in for? Tax evasion or something like that?
Yeah. And then, like, and one of the crime women is just a 70s go-go dancer.
Like, I did notice that.
A black 70s go-go dancer, which is apparently supposed to equate as criminal in our mental shorthand. It did not.
It was very cliched.
Yeah.
Like, I've never been to a jail, a local jail, so I don't know if that's what they're like, but that doesn't seem like a thing that should be a thing where, you know, you just have a big giant cell with 30 people in it.
Yeah, that's like
that seems like something that only exists in movies.
Yeah, I don't think the holding tank is, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past prisons right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
And the crime ladies room is just, I think it's completely unintentional. Like, Gabriel being bad is the clear text of the movie, but I think the criminal ladies being, you know, bad and evil criminals is just shorthand, because the movie then proceeds to have Gabriel kill all the criminal women who were harassing Madison. But then he also kills a bunch of cops. So I don't think the movie's making, like, a moral judgment on the people in this police station, necessarily.
Yeah. No, it just, it needed she needed a reason to
Hulk
go
out.
On a rampage yeah. and kill everyone.
And the women being mean to her was good enough? Sure.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, you say being mean, they were beating the shit out of
in
her.
Yeah, they were, but in a way that didn't seem like it would get them anything. It's like, oh, so these two women, like the lesbian biker and the 70s go-go dancer, are just like bloodthirsty and ready to kill.
Yeah, they're beating her up for the sake of beating her up. Like you said, because they're offended, and I guess maybe they're already in jail, so who cares?
They're probably not in jail for murder.
Probably not.
Okay, so that is the core issue with the movie, is that okay. It is too mean and dark with its yeah. like actual story structure, and that, like, once you see it, it's a little bit hard to enjoy the goofy violence. Because it's very goofy. It's very over the top and silly. The backwards movement is a great visual. Like, they really, like, put their stunt actors through their paces on that one. Like, sometimes yeah. it's effects, but other times it's obviously just a bendy person moving backwards.
Which is, it looks great. Like, when that happens, if we jump back to positives now that we're spoiling everything, like, the backwards movement is incredible. Like, it looks really, really, really good, and to the point where, like I said, it's weird enough and subtle enough and off enough that you don't clock it immediately for what it is unless you already know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned before we started recording that I didn't know about the twist. I didn't see the twist coming, but I probably should have, because I did even clock at one point when Gabriel is running away from one of these cops, I said to myself that he looks really weird. It's almost like he's running backwards.
Which is exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, exactly. And like running and jumping and climbing like all backwards. And which is why, like, when you see him like climbing on the ceiling and looking at the person. His arms look all weird, but that's just because it's a person, like a regular person climbing like you normally would, but the face is on the back of their head and you don't recognize that until you know what it is.
Yeah, and it's even incorporated into some of the fight scene. Like, it's a big kung fu fight with the cops, but because like his knees are backwards, he can kick off in really unusual angles to get momentum that you won't expect. It's clear, like, that this was something they really wanted to put effort into, and it shows.
Right, and he does, like, Matrix-style, like, completely leaning back and dodging things to get out of the way, like, way further than any human should be able to bend backwards, because the human body is just bending forwards.
Yeah.
It just, like, rotating the face around to the back of the head just makes everything look weird and cool and like surreal and just a little bit off.
The fight scenes, you said Matrix. I actually want to compare them more to V for Vendetta. Specifically, I mean, they're similar, but specifically in the way that Gabriel uses knives.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, that's good. I get why people like this. I mean, it's not a movie to be taken seriously, which is kind of what I'm doing, which is why I don't like it. But if you don't take it seriously, it's just a dumb, goofy ride.
Okay.
Yeah, that starts absolutely out as sort of like a decently paced, like, horror movie, and then ends with action nonsense, which is a good way to go.
Hi, everybody. It's me, your ex-Pitchmaster General, Seth. I'm back just to talk about my upcoming movie. We currently have an Indiegogo running, and that's why I'm here. I'm here for money. I'm begging for money. That's why I'm here. I get it. Nobody likes these ad breaks. I don't like making them either. But, you know, this is important. This is a big part of the filmmaking industry and us putting ourselves out there. And you, listener, have been supporting us for so long, it must feel cool that you guys helped push us into filmmaking at this point. Like, we would not be making a movie if it weren't for this show and the other shows that we've all made together. Some of these podcast hosts that have been on Film Rescue are involved in different ways. Your host of this episode is the co-writer of the film that we're working on. He's also going to be one of the producers on set with us. Like, I think all this stuff is really, 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 really cool. And I hope that that is enough to sell you on helping us. If you go to Indiegogo.com and type in The Bludgeoning or Montressor Media, it'll take you to our page. We're going to be updating that as we have more information to show you. We're in the middle of building all of the gore effects before we head up to shoot in the summer. I'm just really excited for it. The levels start at $10, which I know, that's 10 times as much as our Patreon. And the reason for that is because cost scales up in a movie. $10 is closer to a dollar on set in the exchange rate of how far money can get you. So that $10 level gets you in and gets you a lot of digital prizes that we are making up for this project, including a digital graphic novel of the movie. I think just for $10, you get a comic book. That's really cool. And if we hit all of our goals, you get a physical version of that comic book too for that $10. I'm really stoked that we're able to offer this. The levels go up from there all the way up to a grand. And I want to talk about that because this isn't just investing in us. You're actually getting things for those higher levels. If you're investing a grand, we're going to give you one of those gore effects I was just talking about. One of the arms, one of the legs, one of the chest pieces, like legit used in the movie gore effects could be yours. We're making really high quality props that we can reuse in future movies, but we're making so many of them for this one, and they're going to be to some degree resettable, that we're hoping that this can be part of what helps to finance the movie. You can have a part of horror cinema in your home. I recommend getting it displayed or something like that if that's the kind of stuff you're into. It's the ultimate horror fan payoff. Like, what if you could get one of the gore effects from Friday the 13th or Halloween or something like that. Wouldn't I think it's really cool that we have the foresight and the ability to offer that. But my ad is running over 3 minutes long now, and you probably don't want to hear me talk anymore. So here's back to a movie that I think is excellent, that our guest has some thoughts on. I'm excited to now be part of the audience with you and listen to the end of this.
All right. Well, welcome back. And now we're going to hear Alexa's pitch for how to fix Malignant. I assume that's going to start with making it less mean.
Yes, that is... yeah, structurally, this movie doesn't really need a lot of fixing. It just needs a lot of details changed. Although I do want to make a big shift on the ending.
Okay.
I don't... you know what? When you were talking, you mentioned how she's definitely going to jail. I don't have a fix for that, but I don't think this movie really requires a fix for that. I feel like this is the kind of movie that's totally fine with just doing shit and you, like...
You don't... The movie doesn't ask you to think past the end of it.
No. All right. So the big spooky hospital where the doctors heroically shoot a child with an elephant gun. We're not going to change that. Maybe change some of the framing a little, because the gun is shown as cool rather than scary.
Okay.
But fundamentally, it's fine if these doctors are abusive pieces of shit. Because they're dying anyway, and really, it's later stuff that undercuts their deaths. So, then we get to Madison getting home. Now, the big change here, she's not pregnant in my rewrite, because the reason she was, you know, miscarrying so much is stated as Gabriel absorbing her fetuses to build up his power.
Right.
We're getting rid of that. this movie is too dumb to deal with miscarriages. We're not doing that.
That's fair.
I mean, are immediately going into her husband being abusive, which is also kind of dark, but it's more on the level you'd expect from a horror movie. Because, even with the movie we have, Derek doesn't really do a lot on screen. It's all implications. It's enough to tell you that this relationship is bad. You don't actually see a lot of it.
Right. They do mention, previous, DV calls, that the police have been to their house before.
So,
and I think that's probably enough. I think you're right.
Yeah. So he gets killed downstairs, just like in the original movie. But she does not have a miscarriage from this. Now, one thing that is said that I want to draw attention to, because I am going to use it later, is that her sister, Sydney, shows up because, you know, her sister's been involved in a murder scene.
Sure.
She shows up to be a supportive sister. Sydney's great. Sydney's just generally a good person in this movie.
Love Sydney.
And she has a line about how she actually hasn't seen Madison lately, because her husband didn't like them hanging out together.
Right.
So, in the movie that we have, she says that I didn't know about the other miscarriages because they're not allowed to talk. We're just going to cut out the miscarriage part. It's enough that the sisters have been forcefully separated from each other by Derek. So we don't really have to do much there, but there is a line where Sydney and Madison are just kind of sitting down and talking, and Madison reveals to Sydney that she's adopted. But she goes about it in a weird way.
side point, real just quick tangent. Did it strike you as weird that the doctors would just share Madison's personal medical history with these detectives? Did that seem odd? That seemed odd to me.
That does seem a little odd, yeah.
Because it was the detective that revealed, that told Sydney that, this is her third miscarriage in 2 years. And she's I had no idea of the other ones.
Yeah, that
So the doctor told the detectives about the other miscarriages, presumably.
Yeah, which I can see a doctor dropping that in passing to a cop they know, but it's still very unprofessional.
Yeah, very. And it has, like, it has no bearing on this murder case.
No, no, it doesn't. So, Madison is talking to Sydney, and she says something. I've always wanted a biological connection with someone. It's her talking about, like, how she's been trying to have a child because she doesn't feel like she has a biological family because she's adopted. That's weird. I don't like that. That line is weird.
It is weird.
It's not kind to adoptive families. Now, the movie eventually comes down on the side of adoptive families, but the focus on the word biological was weirdly overemphasized, and I'm going to be straight, kind of turfy.
I was just going to make that same connection. Like, in this year, in 2021, when this came out, biological is a very loaded term.
Yeah, it's a little turfy. We don't need that line.
No.
Madison can just be like, I'm not actually sure how you would phrase that sentence so that you have the revelation that Madison is adopted to Sydney. Maybe Sydney already knows and says something like, yo, should we see if we can get your adoption papers checked to see if you have a history of, I don't know, brain injuries because you just got pushed into a wall real hard.
Right, like, or maybe we can try to find your biological mother again, or something like that.
Yeah. There is a scene in this movie that we completely skipped over where the birth mother, who now works as a tour guide in some sort of underground town thing, gets kidnapped.
Yeah, so this is supposedly the Seattle Underground, where you know, at some point, the entirety of Seattle was rebuilt one story up to prevent flooding. So there is an entire, like, there's a whole, effectively a whole city underground in, like, that goes through the entire area, covers the entire area of Seattle beneath the city that we know it.
Mm-hmm. That scene is oddly placed from a from an audience perspective. You don't know who this woman is. We don't know why we're following her. We don't know why Gabriel kidnaps her. Like, and that's all a mystery until the end of the movie, but it's just sort of like a lingering mystery with not a very satisfying revelation.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have a fix for that one because she does need to get got, and it's kind of important that she's got and kept alive because then she falls through the ceiling, which is the ultimate revelation of how, like, Gabriel's bat cave is in her attic.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I mean, honestly, it might not have to be a mystery to the audience that she's their biological mother. Like, you could play with some editing where, you know, they're like, they have that same conversation, like, you know, we don't know what's going on. You know, Sydney says, maybe we can try to find your biological mother again. And
then
Madison
we
is
cut
like,
to this lady.
Right. Madison would be like, I wouldn't even know where to start looking for her. And then we cut immediately to her giving this tour.
That is a fantastic use of the Kuleshov effect.
Right. And yeah, just sort of imply that narrative that somebody who's paying really close attention could probably assume, like, oh, this must be the mom.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't know who she is. And then, like, that actually even makes it even more clear that these, like, this paranormal, this thing that is attacking people is, like, is attacking people that are around, that are related to Madison in some way, which sort of plants that seed that maybe Madison is in, there's some relationship between Madison and these doctors.
Yes. So at a certain point in the movie, Sydney and Madison go back to see their mom, Jean, who is like in a wheelchair, but you know, she's like retired. She's fine. She's out in the country.
Sure.
She's good.
Yeah.
She's got a bunch of old VHS tapes from when Madison was growing up. That's how we learn about Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing where she sees the toy phone ringing, which is how she knows Gabriel wants to talk to her. That's good visual storytelling. I like that. I generally don't have a lot of issues with this part of the story, but the thing that it comes down to is that Gabriel is jealous of her unborn sister and tries to sort of mind trick Madison into stabbing her mother's pregnant belly.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting rid of that. I am aiming to make Gabriel sympathetic.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Going out of his way to stab a pregnant mother's tummy, that's not sympathetic. I don't think I can pull him back from that. So we're just not going to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, and it can be the thing where, you know, Gabriel is like her imaginary friend, but he's also kind of a mean imaginary friend. Like, he's not a kind person necessarily, because this is after they've been forcibly like mutilated. And right. So Gabriel being angry is legitimate. And what I'm changing the core conflict here is that Gabriel is jealous of Sydney. Like, he's got a lot of complicated emotions about Sydney, because Sydney is a very good sister to Madison, and Gabriel cares about Madison. So he likes that Sydney takes care of her, but he's jealous he can't do it. And he's also jealous of the time they spend together. And most importantly, Gabriel knew about the abuse. Like, he, like in my version of the story, Gabriel is back there and he's awake, like he's aware, and he just sort of stays out of it. He just sort of like rides along on his sister's life. So he is, one, jealous of Sydney, and also angry at her for not stopping Derek from abusing them.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's got a lot of complicated emotions about Sydney.
Right, because he's completely powerless to do anything but watch in general.
Yeah.
But Sydney should be able to do something. Like, and Sydney should be able to help, and she's not.
And yeah, and she fails to help, which is not, it's not necessarily a failing on Sydney's part. Like, that's just not the narrative you want to establish around abusive husbands like that. It's absolutely on the abusive husband.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't mean people in those situations come out with completely clear-headed emotions on the subject.
Sure, yeah. I could definitely see some resentment there from a person, from a consciousness that's completely powerless because he has no body.
Why?
Being, you know, bitter at, like, angry because he can't stop Derek, and he can't be angry at Madison for not doing anything about it because he loves Madison, and, you know, he's blind to any of her potential faults. So he's lashing out at the next person over, which is Sydney, for not doing anything.
Yeah. So, small change here. This is after the cop chase, where Sydney's like, "Hey, my sister's having psychic visions. Don't you use psychic sometimes?" And the cops are like, "No, we don't do that. That's a movie thing." But then later, they bring in a hypnotherapist to unlock Madison's deep memories of Gabriel. And I'm like, okay, so the cops in this movie don't use psychics, but they do use hypnotists.
I mean, they do kind of lampshade that a little bit. And because, like, she even calls it out, like, we've got a hypnotherapist, and Sydney's makes that, like, and the deadpan woman detective is like, "It's not a psychic." Like, she's very much like, "It's not a psychic. It's a hypnotherapist. That's completely different," obviously.
Well, I don't like the hypnotherapist angle.
Okay.
I want to get rid of that. I want it to be sort of an expansion of the interrogation scene where they keep poking holes in Madison's story till eventually Gabriel has to come out and admit what he's done.
Okay.
Now, obviously, they're still in a position where they're like, "Well, we have to arrest them both."
Right.
Okay, so Madison gets thrown in the crime room. I don't want to get rid of the crime room necessarily, because at this point, the movie's going to go full psychotic action, which
is... So you mean the big roundup jail cell?
Yeah, the big roundup jail cell with all the crime ladies. Obviously, small change. We're just getting rid of the disco dancer and, like,
yeah,
it's like, we're just going to make these ladies look a little bit more normal. Okay. Like, normal people end up in jail all the time. Madison did, although Madison's hardly normal.
Very true.
Okay. So, Yeah, and obviously those small visual changes, but the big change I'm going to make is that it's not the prisoners that abuse Madison. It's a cop who comes in to abuse the prisoners.
Okay, yeah.
And same thing happens. Gabriel comes out. You get the full transformation sequence. This is the stuff people like. We don't really got to mess with this much. Just, right. I don't want Gabriel killing a bunch of women who might be in for who knows what. Probably not murder, though.
Mm-hmm. So instead of having just an entire floor, like room full of prisoner and cop corpses, you'd have maybe like half a dozen or a dozen cops sprawled in various positions of disfigurement, and a dozen of like the women prisoners like huddled in the back corners terrified.
Yeah, they're absolutely terrified to death of this.
Okay, I like it.
It's scary. It's absolutely terrifying watching Gabriel do his thing. Like, just watching Madison walk backwards is very unsettling.
Yeah.
So he murders the shit out of them. And this is the point where they, John, the mother and the sister are watching more tapes that they found by going and checking out the extremely gothic,
the castle on the hill.
Yeah, the castle on the hill.
It's like, you weren't wrong when you compared it to Arkham Asylum. It's very gothic, like very, I keep coming back to cliches, like. There's a lot of shorthand in this movie.
It honestly reminds me of some of the buildings in the Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah,
where they're just looming and square, but with like rounded edges. Very Art Deco gothic, kind of. But yeah, okay, fine, we'll do that. We're cutting out the part where we learn that Gabriel and Madison's mother was raped at 14. We're just getting rid of that. This is a part where we do have to be a little mean for the purposes of the story continuing. Madison and Gabriel's mother does have to give them up because Gabriel is a lot. He's not pleasant to look at. And it can just be that Madison and Gabriel's mother was an 18-year-old who's like, I don't want this child, and I didn't want any child, really, and I definitely don't want this one. Like, it can just be, like, she's young and irresponsible. It doesn't have to be that she's, like, evil and hates them.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that. It could also be a, like, we could go even a step further that maybe she didn't necessarily want to give them up, but her fundamentalist religious parents forced her to.
Yeah.
Or something. Because maybe she was underage. Maybe she was 16. And, you know, she was still sort of in their care, and they were like, no, we're not keeping this abomination. This is the devil or something.
Yeah. The main thing to take out is the part where their mother was raped, because that sort of adds an original sin element to it that's really hinky and ugly. We don't need that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, also, okay, so this is the part where we have to start adjusting the way the movie presents the doctors. Because at this point, the doctor, we're watching some tapes of the doctors, and they're like, oh, Gabriel's a parasite, and we have, like, video evidence of him being, like, really dangerous and bad and awful. Which, we want to sort of shift the frame of that, because at this point in the movie, we know what Gabriel is, and the movie we have, Gabriel is the monster, so of course the scientists are the
doctors. They sort of become sympathetic here.
Yeah, they become sympathetic here. We don't want that. They're shock treating a child. They're bad people. They are bad. Mm-hmm. They work in a big, scary, gothic building of science. I mean, how are they the good guys? How did this happen?
Yeah, I like the idea of really, especially playing into the idea that it's not like, yes, Gabriel is disfigured and a lot, like you said, but that he wasn't born evil. I like the idea of coming around to, like, people did this to him. Like, people made him this way. Maybe his grandparents might have abused the two of them, and the doctors certainly didn't treat them with any kindness. And, like, he is a product of these first 8 years of of abuse and of mistreatment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's exactly what
I'm going for. As
opposed
to just being, like, evil to the core because evil.
Yeah, that's a thing I try to avoid in storytelling just in general.
Sure, yeah.
So we have the big backwards fight scene. I'm not morally opposed to Gabriel killing a room full of cops. I understand that that's not a universally held opinion.
Did you say you are or you are not?
I am not opposed to him killing a room full of cops.
Especially if you, like, especially if you set it up with them being, like, again, mistreating the prisoners, whether it be Madison or one of the other women, and Madison slash Gabriel comes to their defense.
Yeah, I'm actually going to specify that it is going to be a cop assaulting another prisoner.
Okay.
Because I have a metaphor for Gabriel that I'm going to really nail down once we get to the hospital.
Okay.
So, we have the backwards fight scene, and they go to the hospital, and he's, we're going to have it that he's uncertain to how he wants to handle their mother. Like, he absolutely killed a bunch of people to get here, but now that he's got his mom in his mercies, he's not sure if he wants to do it.
Yeah.
Or he's trying to psych himself up. Because, like we said at the beginning of the movie, he caught her. He didn't, like, have to keep her alive. He could have, you know, just killed her then. Like, if he's just on, like, a murder everyone rampage, there's no particular reason to save her for last.
Right.
Oh,
well, He did specify that he wanted, like, I don't remember if it was that he wanted her to watch or he wanted somebody to watch somebody. Like, he wanted her to see him, like, murder Sydney in front of her so that she would see that what she made, like, something. I don't remember. It was bad.
Yeah, we're junking all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, while he's deciding, Sydney tries to get involved and gets the very, very heavy hospital bed thrown on top of her.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the part where Madison sort of pushes back in. And this is where we settle on the core metaphor of Gabriel. Gabriel represents anger and violence, but it's anger and violence that can be used to defend yourself. He is representative of Madison's self-protective instincts.
Sure.
Which were beaten out of her by scientists and shoved in, and it was, like, forced out of her by her abusive husband.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going with here is, in having Gabriel murder all these bad people, is that her violent protective instincts are good, but she can't let them run free.
Right.
Because letting them run free has Gabriel murder Sydney, because, as we've discussed earlier, Gabriel has legitimate, and Madison too, probably has buried legitimate emotional anger towards Sydney for not saving them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, killing her is not really the solution.
So, would it make sense then to retcon Sydney to where she is the older sister?
Since we're not...
And Madison was adopted as a young child, like, when Madison was 8, and say, like, maybe Sydney was 12 at this point.
Yeah, that works better, because we're already getting rid of the part where Sydney is almost stabbed as a fetus.
Yeah, exactly. if we're excising, that may have been a poor choice of phrase, but if we're getting rid of the
if we're aborting that story element,
what you say?
If we're aborting that story element,
yeah, yes, exactly. Then we don't need her to be the baby sister. It might make more sense for her to be a little bit literally the big sister who would normally have been in a protective role, mm-hmm. and having her specifically fail in that.
Yes. So Madison and Gabriel still have their confrontation in the Mind Palace, but the ultimate answer is not lock Gabriel away forever, because not only is he a real person, He's also right. representative of her protective violent instincts, which we yeah. have just learned have their place.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about locking him away. It's about confronting the things that drive him and calming him down and treating him like a real person with emotional wants and needs.
Right.
And
which is great for that metaphor, because if he represents her anger, like, that's not something that you can keep bottled up. You have to learn how to sort of, there needs to be some synthesis. You have to understand it and know when it is healthy and how it is healthy to express that anger.
Yes. And
otherwise you end up snapping and going on a rampage.
Yeah, which is what happened in this movie. This was her rampage.
Exactly.
And I add a scene at the end. I have a whole extra scene and I want it to be brightly lit. I want okay. Madison to sort of be like in a sunny sundress, like a yellow sundress, and they're like having a picnic with Sydney, and she's got a big hat on, and like they're talking, they give some bullshit explanation for why she's not locked up in prison forever. Whatever you can come up with that works, James Wan.
They ran away. They're hiding out in a country without extradition.
They're in Canada. But they're sitting, they're having a picnic, they're discussing how the movie wraps up, and then Madison grabs a snack and sort of reaches back and feeds Gabriel, who is still on the back of her head. And you see him nice. Just kind of like take a little snack, chomp away, and he doesn't like he doesn't look like a normal face. That's important. I want him to sure. still look freaky.
Yeah,
but he's like
contented freaky.
Yeah, he's like happy to have a snack. He's happy to be acknowledged and part of this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's not just shoved into the back of her head. And so like that's one cute moment. And two, like you can do like a really like freaky visual. And I know this director likes freaky visuals. Like it can still look pretty freaky that he's on the back of her skull and she just has to live with that now.
Sure. Yeah.
Part of the reason I want to do that is because there's a part in the movie where they say that he's a freakish conjoined teratoma twin, and that I'm not trying to speak for conjoined twins here, but I can't imagine they like that.
Yeah, probably.
Conjoined twins are absolutely a thing, and they're not all capable of being removed. Some of them are just like not
yeah.
capable of existing apart from each other, and they just have to live with that for their whole lives. For a little while there, I saw two sisters who are conjoined on TikTok. They mm-hmm. had a sense of humor about it.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to lean into that, where like at the end they are two separate people who just have to live together for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. I think the image could be, so rather than Madison reaching back, I like the idea of, since Gabriel has at least one eye too, or maybe two eyes, I don't remember, but have like, they're like all of them are like on a beach or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Madison is kind of reclining with her sun hat, and Sydney goes to walk away to get something, and she's got some grapes or chips or something in her hand. And as she's walking away, she walks behind Madison, and Madison leans forward and takes her hat off, and Sydney like tosses a grape at the back of Madison's head. And then the camera swings around and you see Gabriel just chomping, chewing on it all happy and content. Like,
well, that would add into Sydney being like the protector role. Like now she's got a little brother too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And you can end on like a great shot of like Gabriel staring at the ocean. He's like, oh, he has a future. He has a horizon now. Just completely steal that from Star Wars.
I like it.
So yeah,
that's great.
That's how I'd fix the movie. You still get to have all your stupid, dumb action scenes, which are so fun and stupid. But you cut out a lot of the meanness. Not all of it, because mm-hmm. it is a horror movie. It needs to be a little like rough and tumble and gross.
Yeah.
But I've given it, I think, a much more coherent moral core.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely like the things that it is saying without saying them are a lot more one, more clear, and two, easier to handle, easier to stomach, and a little bit less less icky feeling.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, I'm obviously coming at this from a general leftist, I care about other people perspective.
Right.
I'm just gonna flat out say that I think the other perspective where Gabriel is a monster and bad is wrong. That is a wrong perspective.
Yeah, it's a bad take. Like, it is, that is 100% valid to say that that is a bad take.
And it makes the movie unpleasant for me to watch because it's all I can think about for all the cool, fun stuff. So let's just get rid of it. We don't need it. I think I've just demonstrated we don't need it. And in fact, we can get a really cute scene at the end.
I wonder if I really like, so your pitch is excellent. I absolutely like no notes for sure. I was just thinking about like a little micro pitch. I wonder if there's a way that we could structure it so that like Gabriel was the good twin the whole time and had been like keeping Madison in check for their entire life, sort of behind the scenes. And like when that initial scene, like when she cracks the back of her head, he gets hurt. So now like the real Madison can come out to play. I don't know if it works with like, cause you don't really get the backwards thing then unless it's like him momentarily taking over to get away or to just defend himself or something.
I don't know if there's a whole movie in that, but there's like a fun Elseworlds episode or something on that.
Yeah, exactly. That's a neat little like video short for something.
Yeah. And it obviously only works in the context of knowing the story of Malignant. We're going to mix it up a little.
Yeah, exactly. But that is a fantastic pitch. I 100% would watch that movie. I would watch that movie probably more than once, which I don't think I'm going to watch Malignant as it stands more than once. That's great. Thank you for bringing this to us and to the listeners. I think that probably wraps it up. Why don't you tell folks where they can see more of your stuff?
Okay, yes. I've been running a YouTube channel since several years before my transition. So love to have a video log of that. But you can go back and watch a dumb nerd talk about manga, or you can watch my more recent movie-focused and video game-focused stuff at Pluto Burns on YouTube. I'm also Pluto Burns on Twitter. That's the planet Pluto on fire, which is completely possible. It has an atmosphere of methane. So just go ahead, light that sucker on fire.
Absolutely.
I've also been on the School of Movies podcast a lot recently for the Matrix shows, which are quite good. You should listen.
And you were on Free Guy too, weren't you?
I was on Free Guy. I also did Castlevania. Mm-hmm. I really cut my teeth on that one. That was a marathon recording session.
For sure. And all of those, as an avid listener of School of Movies myself, I can say that all of her episodes are fantastic. You bring as much to those shows as you brought to this one.
Yay!
Very, very good stuff.
I'm valued. Hooray.
Yay. Yes. So go check out Alexa's stuff. Go check out her YouTube channel. Go check out her guest appearances on other shows. And I think the only other things that we can, I guess I have some stuff that we can plug for Film Rescue.
Yeah. Don't you have a movie or something?
We do. We are in the process of raising the final bit of funds for our queer slasher set in Salem, Massachusetts that we're going to be filming in June. Seth and I wrote the screenplay along with a couple of other folks, and we've got our cast all set. We've got a bunch of locations picked out already. We're getting a lot of help from a lot of great folks. Chris Chipman and several other people. We have technically enough budget to film the movie, to shoot the movie, to do everything we need. So it's gonna happen either way. But we have an Indiegogo to, you know, give us a nicer place to stay while we're there and maybe make crash services a little better and maybe shoot on some better cameras. So if you would like to go check that out, I'm sure Seth will put a link in the show notes. And other than that, I think we're all done. And I have no idea how to close this out because this is my first time. So I'm just going to say, take it easy.
Have a good night. We'll be right back.